Design is impossible to escape. From the user experiences in the products and the apps that drive our daily lives to the cut and the style of the clothing that you're probably wearing right now. And let's not forget those thousands of messages that we get every single day through marketing and advertising. So when crafting these messages and communicating these products and services, it's important to do so from a standpoint of good ethics and even better intentions. Hey, I'm Hayden Buchanan, and this is Create Creative Creatives. My guest today is my good friend, Jonathan Key, the founder and creative director of design firm Studio 3AM. In my conversation with Jonathan, we get into what it's like to be an up-and-coming young blood in the design industry, all the way to what it's like to have your own design studio and manage the creativity of others, all whilst creating good work with good ethics in mind. As always, there are chapter markers below if you feel like skipping ahead through anything. But for now, please enjoy my conversation with my good friend, Jonathan Key. So first things first, thank you so much for coming by and being a part of this today.
Thank you so much for having me, mate.
It's been a year since we've seen each other, right?
Yeah. It's been a while, you know, just a few, you know, mild world events, you know.
Stopping things, yeah.
Yep.
And for those who don't know you, you are Jonathan Key and you run Studio 3AM.
That's correct, yes.
So what does Studio 3AM do? It's a design studio amongst a thousand other things.
Yeah, so Studio 3AM founded 5 years ago. We're a creative agency specializing in art direction, branding, motion, animation, you know, anything creative really. And yeah, it's been a wild journey ever since it began.
You've had a couple of high-profile clients like Mansionaire, the band. The album artwork and brand design for them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess there are different levels and categories of work that we do. My roots kind of began with music, but we also work with bigger brands like Sony Australia, Porsche, Audi. And just loving it.
Nice. I work for you for a little bit there. Yeah, social media stuff, actually. It was a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Beautiful few weeks.
But you've had a small sort of studio for about two or three people for quite some time now. You've got quite the team now, don't you?
Yeah.
How many people are on staff now?
Seven full-time. And seven then, full-time. You know, one web and one sound when we need them. Nice. But yeah, it's been a really nice organic growth, I guess, over time. And
because your peak was through COVID though, like you were growing rapidly throughout COVID, right?
I would say towards the end of COVID is really when everything started to accelerate. But at the beginning, I think everything was like quite conservative. Don't grow too quickly. You know, don't try to get too ambitious. But, you know, over time, as, you know, people start to discover your work and discover, you know, like your team and who you are and what you're about, I think quite naturally people gravitate towards things that they value and, you know, just people that are passionate about what they do, right?
Yeah, I love that. And for you, when you started the agency, how did you go from obviously being a working designer to being an agency owner? How did that jump occur for you?
Well, if I'm being completely honest, I guess I didn't have a direct goal to start a studio of seven and then grow it from, you know, like to what it is right now. It was actually quite more of a, oh, I'm going to freelance with a friend for a bit, you know, we'll call ourselves a studio, but, you know, let's see how it, where it takes us. It was a time in my life where, you know, I'd spent the last 3 years at full time as a designer. And I guess I was just like seeking the next challenge, like where to go from here. And I just, again, quite naturally fell into that spot of, you know, freelancing and trying to pick jobs that I was really passionate about.
So with that, going from being in an agency where you get given the clients that are already there, how would you go about getting clients into a studio environment, or even if it was just the two of you?
Well, funnily enough, I guess I have always, you know, found organic ways to kind of work with people. Even in high school before, you know, I even really knew what graphic design was. I was obsessed with music, you know, doing album art and things like that. And what I would do is I would, I don't know if you've heard of this, but like Triple J Unearthed.
Yep.
Like a really cool platform promoting just Australian independent artists. I would just go through all the artists and just find the artists that I really like gravitated towards, love their music. And this is like speaking to my age, but I would go to their MySpace account and I would just like send them a direct message being like, hey, yeah, I'm still in high school, but would you like some album art? And to be honest, that hasn't changed too much.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally I'll put myself out there. You know, it's not Triple J Unearthed these days. It might be LinkedIn. It might be a news article that inspires me. And that would make me go out there and just find their contact details and just send them a message. And, you know, sometimes something will come of it and other times nothing will. But, yeah, like truly it is just a case of like, what am I passionate about? Who do I think is doing cool things? And where do I think we should put our time and, you know, love?
Like, I notice a lot of the clients that you work with really long term. Like it's not just like one project. You seem to be like their partner in a lot of things.
Absolutely.
Over a long period of time. How do you build those sorts of relationships in your business? Obviously, there's like standards to hit and like delivering good work. And I know that Studio 3AM delivers really, really high quality work. And that's a big part of it. But what are the other things that you do that are sort of, you know, they're not on the invoice at the end of it that you get?
Yeah, absolutely.
The relationship going from there.
I think it's pretty early on, even when we have a new client or how they come on board to work with us. I make it really clear at the beginning that, look, we are a business. We need to make a profit. But I make it very clear that I'm interested in a partnership to make, you know, not only great work that, you know, obviously makes a profit for the end purpose, whether that be, you know, a musician, a big electronics brand or a car brand. But yeah, something that pushes the boundaries artistically and, you know, like we can be proud of this. I think life's too short to kind of do work just to do it. I'm really interested in like, how do we push this brief? How do we get the best value out of something? And, you know, not just for the client or myself, but, you know, for my team as well, to be really creatively interested and invested in the end product.
So I think what I'm getting from that is that you love being like the creative solution to the business problems.
Absolutely. Yeah. I get a huge kick out of that.
Yeah.
I'm super geeky, but yeah, nothing gives
it's
me
like
more
joy. It's like
the
initial meetings and stuff like that.
Totally.
That
you, yeah.
Is there like any tricks that you use in how to like discover those? Like often, like whenever I see a brief through my own work or anything freelance, there's what you've been asked to do and then there's what you're actually meant to accomplish. And they often don't align because the client or the business that you're working with can sometimes be so deep in the mud that they can't see how to fix it. And I guess that's why they're hiring out a studio like yourself. But how do you extract that kind of information out of them?
Well, I guess in the last 1 to 2 years, we've started introducing, you know, workshops. And what that allows is us to kind of just come in early on and be like, look, we're new to this. We're going to need you guys to educate us on, you know, your product, your idea or your brand. But then like we lay it out all really simply, like what are you trying to achieve here? Like what are the pain points? What are the goals? Having a combination of, you know, all those types of questions kind of leads you to a great result. And it also challenges the client, you know, or the brand to be like, oh, this is where we want to go, but we've been doing it like this. Like maybe we should switch it up. So again, I kind of never really push or like find sneaky ways to suggest things, but a lot of it is really the brand or the client, like just telling us what they need and then kind of admitting that, you know, they need a more creative solution to that problem.
So sort of like letting them get out of their own way.
Yeah.
In a way.
In a way. Getting everything out there and for us to get everything out there because that gives us the opportunity to just share our thoughts and ideas as well. But yeah, it's a collaboration at the end of the day. I think the idea that a creative is coming to a client and they're the genius with the idea, I think that's completely false. Like I truly believe it's like a collaboration between two parties.
Nice. And when you do enter into work, what's the kind of workflow that you go through? So let's just say you've gotten past that initial meeting, you understand their problem, and now you've got to actually get to the deep work of creating their visual assets. What's the workflow that you enter into to get that done?
Well, you know, I really love the number 3, hence the studio name. But yeah, I feel like even in process, everything comes in threes. So generally, we'll spend the first stage doing discovery. And as mentioned, that may involve like a workshop or it may a questionnaire or just like a bunch of meetings or us looking at the competitors, seeing what's out there. The whole second stage dedicated to just like really drafting and doing the work, right? You know, in the invoice, it might be like we're presenting free concepts, but it's the work that we don't show as well that got us to like three really good solutions. You know, you could pick any of those three and they would probably sort of the client's problem in the brief, right? And that's just time. Like doing anything really great, nothing comes for free, right? It's the investment of research and discovery, looking at what's out there, being really inspired. And so, yeah, we do the design, we do the creative, we do the work, and then the third part, like executing, rolling it out properly once the client's happy with the direction. And giving the client the choice to choose is a big part of the buy and to get a good solution as well. But what we kind of, how we approach it is making sure that, you know, the free options we present, we love all of them. So really we don't have a...
Not one strong, one medium.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've always hated that approach because... I feel like it's lazy for the agency to just go all in on one and then like not really care about the other two options. I think that's a bit too, and again, like as a creative agency and as designers and creatives, animators, like we think we know it all, but the truth is that, you know, you only have your own perspective. Yeah. You're going to need the perspective of other people around you and the client to really get to the right place.
Mm. Nice. When you were starting out, obviously you touched on yourself being out there getting album artwork done. That was the first love far as like creating visuals went. When did you decide that like this is what I want to do? And what was that like? Was that like, I want to be a graphic designer, I want to do just album artwork, and then that kind of formed into everything else?
Yeah.
And like, when did you decide to go to school and all those sorts of things?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if I ever told you, but I actually ended up dropping out of school.
Ah.
Yeah. So I'm
double university dropouts.
Hey, nice one. This poem. Stand school kids. But yeah, I think like once I got the inkling that I really enjoyed music, you know, there's something that like clicks in you that you kind of know this is the thing for me. I guess one of the really formative moments in that switch was a TED talk, actually.
Okay.
Have you heard of this talk by Sir Ken Robinson? It's like one of the most watched TED Talks of all time, but the topic is basically how schools kind of kill creativity or don't. They don't.
Watched that one,
yeah,
actually,
it's a really fantastic talk. And that kind of made me realize that, you know, potentially my path wasn't like a traditional one where, you know, finish high school, go to uni, see where that takes you. Really early on, I realized that the stuff that I was really passionate about and that I was good at, because you can only, you know, be good at what you're passionate about over time, right? It was typography, it was visuals, it was artwork, it was music, and it was like kind of like psychology in a weird way, like how people think from a marketing point of view, and business. All of those things had interest me, but doing commerce in high school never really like attracted me or hit those things that, you know, made me fall in love with what I do today. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of where the path like switched for me. I spent a lot of time doing album art and progressively like from that discovered what graphic design was. I mean, we take it for granted now. Everyone knows what graphic design is. Mm. You know, design is so... you know, like held up it so highly. But that's because of Apple, I guess, you know, back in the 2000s or 90s.
The first people to market design as a feature of a product.
Exactly, yeah. So we really take it for granted now. But I think before then, like the concept that people would put a lot of time and money into just like purely the visual identity or like trying to push that further.
Or function over form, and now it's...
Yeah.
We kind of went completely the opposite direction, and now we're kind of working our way back towards...
Yeah, absolutely. And people have different perspectives on how that should work. But yeah, ultimately, like design, like everyone knows what a font is now, right? Nice. Yeah. Cool.
Oh, nice. Going into running a business, how do you find having staff has changed how your approach to creativity? Because obviously, it's not just you behind the computer making things now. You're managing the creativity of creative people.
Yeah, yeah.
How has that changed or informed how you do your own work now?
Mm, absolutely. So I would say the first 1 to 2 years, and, you know, I say this quite honestly, were, you know, in some ways creatively selfish because, you know, I just wanted that creative freedom to express myself and pick the clients I wanted, do the work I wanted to do. But I didn't really have that long-term vision of, you know, how it would turn out to run like a larger studio. And that's why, you know, I reiterate that like any great creative project, like it's not, you know, a solo project, like it's a team. You know, to make anything fantastic, it's all part of like creating a team. So a big part of my evolution and my role is, you know, being less hands-on with the tools, but more giving creative direction and guidance to a brief, to a client, and to my team. And, you know, sometimes that means that even in the early discovery stage, I'm not even, you know, doing design concepts. Right. I'm really just creating a mood board, sending a few references, giving feedback throughout the day just to make sure it's headed in the right direction. And, you know, yeah, well, there's good and bad parts to it, right? You know, like, I would be lying if I said that I didn't feel like I owned it as much, but I guess that's problematic unto itself.
It's like, very much the artist's problem.
Yeah. What you start to realize is that if everything is owned, celebrated as a team, then it completely changes the dynamic. And, you know, the last 2 to 3 years has really, like, I've really embraced that and I've changed it. So it's no longer like, you know, what did I design or help design? It's like, here's what my team did.
Yeah.
And I start to really direct all the credit and, you know, and attribute it back to the team, because that's just the honest truth. And again, I think the idea of like there's one person behind it all is so silly. So I think, you know, all future creative directors and agencies are going to just like really push for the team. And, you know, why would anyone want to work for a studio as well that didn't kind of like empower them to do the best work and put them on a, you know, in the best place possible. So that's what's changed with me. I just kind of want everyone that works and comes through 3AM to succeed and do well.
Is it the case that with each different creative person that you like work with, that they need a different approach? Or have you found, you know, with you know, people who work on illustrations more so, they'd be a certain way, and then people who work with typography or with visual media in terms of like video motion assets and stuff like that, they're a certain way. How is managing like the individual types of personalities that you'll find?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the same as, you know, that TED talk about education. Everyone's different. So everyone should be curated and treated differently. Some people want more handholding and structure. Other people need more space. But what I try to do is throughout conversations, throughout the day, really curate kind of a journey for them so that they are constantly getting better, increasing their skills, working on projects they're excited about and, you know, doing what they really want to do there. So, for example, Marty, my art director, who joined a few years ago, he has a deep-rooted passion for, like, cars. And so it was in my best interest to make sure that, you know, he had something that he was really passionate about. And,
the child comes out.
Yeah, so absolutely. And, you know, he's so detail orientated. He's about precision. So, you know, giving him something where he could really dig his teeth into and be an incredible art director, designer, like I knew that would be for him. And with Mike, who's, you know, just an incredible award-winning designer. Yeah, just giving people the same like opportunities. Like if I had joined a studio for the first time coming out of uni, what kind of career opportunities and like, resources would I have loved to have gotten? So I ask myself that a lot. And yeah, we have such an incredible team right now. Katrina with the animation, Ernest with the digital direction, Julia, Ria, who's managing it all, you know, just a really incredible team. So lucky to have them.
Touched on like growing your skills and things like that. Where did you find was the first place of growth that you needed to take on in terms of your own skill set as a designer? Because obviously you had that foundation with just making things look really nice and like layouts and color and all those sorts of the foundations. But then how did you expand on from there? Because I know that you've done a bit of absolutely everything that's available to you.
Now. Yeah. I mean, you know me, I'm quite geeky. So quite organically, I get drawn to a new medium or a new discipline, whether it be like animation or like 3D. Illustration, and I'll want to learn it or at least understand it.
Like the obsession.
Yeah, I might be terrible at it, but I think as a creative director, I feel like I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't at least know the vernacular or how to communicate what I want to someone on my team. So, you know, I've always fought that, and I figured out pretty early on that if I wanted to become a good creative director, I would have to kind of put my hand in a little bit of each discipline.
Be on top of it all.
Yeah, exactly. But also just give everyone the space to do what they're great at and specialize in. So the creative side, I have never really wrestled with. It's really the business side that was the biggest like hurdle for me. You know, I'd spent all this time and all these years like investing in my craft to be like a really good creative. And then that jump to starting a studio, it's like, wow, I know absolutely nothing and I am like absolutely terrible. Like, I can be completely honest. Like, the first few years, like, shambles, you know? But, you know, I also don't regret it. I think, like, with business especially, you're going to fail anyway. Even if you got all the right advice and tried to do all the right things, I think you're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
So, I can just kind of be happy that, you know, luck worked out for the best and I got enough second chances to do it the right way. You know, the first few years, would I have done things differently? Like, of course.
Yeah.
But, yeah, right now, like, we're headed in a really great direction, looking for B Corp certification, if you know what that is. And yeah.
For people who don't know what it is, what is B Corp
certification? Yeah, so B Corp certification, basically, it's this idea that businesses aren't just built for a profit, but they're built for a purpose as well. And that's all nice to say and all, but what's great about it is that it forces the company to, like, put a bunch of policies in place to make sure that even if this company got sold off in the future by something else, that it would always remain, like, something built for good. And that's something I'm really passionate about. You know, I don't want to invest all this time making this great business and then, let's say, 20 years down the track.
It's like having an ethics code built in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really important to me, but I also think it's really important for everyone working here as well. You know, you don't want to work for some place you don't believe in, you know, the founder's beliefs or the company's beliefs. Like, we're all the same team. And so, you really want to make sure that
everyone's pulling the rope to get in the same direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What, on the whole business element, obviously, you've had a bunch of trial and error. If you were to give somebody starting a studio any advice on how to make a profitable studio in particular, keep the doors open, keep the lights on, what are the elements that make a studio profitable?
Well, I think being organized, for one, and not being afraid to talk about money. One of the biggest problems I had early on was that I still kind of just saw myself as a freelance graphic designer, and money was always that awkward topic. You know, you agreed to a project fee. Maybe you agreed to a project fee and not an hourly rate, right? And now you've exceeded the hours. Maybe you weren't as defined with the amount of edits that you needed. And now you're stuck in a situation where you should be asking for money, but because you've never learned how, you just don't know how to ask for it. That kind of took a lot of, like, a few years and a lot of books.
Getting screwed over a couple of times.
Yeah, getting screwed over. But, you know, I'm really, like, okay to admit what I'm good at and what I'm bad at. And, you know, the sooner you can admit all the things you're bad at, you can work on them and get better at them. So, you know, whether it be like taking online courses, reading books, yeah, I've really invested heavily in the last few years to kind of take that journey. And I'm always a work in progress, you know, as a creative director, as a business owner, like, there's so much to learn. You'll never learn it all. And, you know, sometimes you do well and sometimes you do bad, but, yeah, just doing the best I can do. Nice. Yeah.
As an artist, when you're looking at hiring somebody and you're a business owner on top of being an artist, how do you discern between those two parts of yourself when looking at staffing or clients or elements of running your studio? Where does the artist come forward and then where does the artist go back and the businessman comes forward? Like, where do those two elements push and pull on the daily basis?
Yeah. So, once upon a time, if I had to wait myself, I would try to be like a 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And the more the business has grown, I've realized that's not going to work out. And, you know, these days I'd think it'd be more like a 80% business and 20% artistic creative director. You know, I'm really quite comfortable these days, like, embracing that role. And I'm kind of finding that the business side can be as creative, you know, in a way, especially to get a good solution, because you're kind of, you have to push the client or the brand in the right direction in order to get a great creative solution. Yeah. So, in many ways, it's kind of like you're batting for your team in a way and, like, trying to get wins and push great ideas across. That's kind of where I'd place it at the moment.
With design and the design world, you know, sharing from many influences around the world through the internet and design fairs and things like that, how have you seen, from, you know, the length of your career so far, design change here in Australia and around the world?
I think design is more accessible now than ever before. Information, resources, like, if you want to learn design, you got platforms and YouTube channels like The Future that are just giving out. Yeah, he's everyone's like business mentor in a weird way.
Matthew Encina, the
I very much
binge his YouTube channel now.
Me too. Yeah, great taste. I mean, there's so much out there now that I feel like anyone with the right mindset and commitment could probably make it work. Design is so accessible. Anyone could start a design studio in theory. Maybe the things missing these days is because it used to be harder. There are certain lessons that are harder to teach now because that information is just right there at your fingertips. And so being able to kind of find answers that aren't easily accessible,
Does that go into more practical experience? Is harder to find because you can find the theoretical answer.
I think so.
Or an easy solution that's not necessarily the best option. Is it that kind of a problem?
Potentially. I think, you know, software is a bit of a weird example, but something that is like two clicks away in Photoshop used to take someone a whole day.
Yeah.
And like, that's a wild thing to think about. And that's why, you know, as a creative, you always kind of got to be on the cutting edge and like up to date with what's going on. So design as a discipline is a lot less about like how long things take, but more idea driven, you know, I think in the future, you're going to have tools like Canva that are free and, you know, it makes design, the cost to access it so simple and easy, but to be able to actually do something with strategy for it and intention behind it. Like I think, anything you want to be a master at, that takes years.
That kind of changes what the business sells as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, like design, people perceive it as how it looks, but again, we might be digging too much into maybe brand strategy and campaigns, but yeah, it's the thought and the strategy behind it of, you know, how you change minds and bring someone on a journey, on a story, right?
Mm. If you were just beginning, how would you go about getting... not necessarily the way you are, but how would you go from being completely novice and just interested in design to working in the industry? What would you say is the best path or your recommended path to get in the door?
I think it would probably be doing a bunch of internships throughout uni if you have the time. I know that is quite a luxury. But if you couldn't do internships, then just like trying to do side projects as you were still studying. By the time you get out of university, though, not to, you know, position ourselves as the place to be, but I do think there's a lot to be said that like a small studio or a small environment.
You can spruik the heck out of this, by the way.
But honestly, like a small studio is going to give those, you know, whoever joins like more love and care and attention. Whereas if you joined a bigger agency or a bigger company, you might get paid a few more K, but, you know, are you going to get the attention or like, career path and journey that you probably need? Like potentially not, you're not going to get that progression. So I would just look at earlier on in your career to invest in yourself, like learn as much as you can, humble yourself, because at the beginning you don't know anything. Right now I don't know enough, and people older than me and have been in this much longer, they're still learning, so you never know it all.
What would be your top resources to jump into? Obviously, you just mentioned like watching the future, which is like you can spend, I think, months at a time just sitting there watching all kinds of different talks that they do and running through one-on-one actions and stuff. I think that's one of the best resources on YouTube. Mm. But what other resources are out there for an up-and-coming designer?
Or somebody
even working in the industry
today? Yeah, well, I guess a lot of people would like to give very design or business focused resources, but I think mental is kind of like the best place to start, because you got mental being like the mindset and understanding, you know, the journey that you're about to go on. So there was a really important book I read, probably like that changed my viewpoint on my career path, and it's called How to Be a Graphic Designer Without Losing Your Soul. It's a really incredible book because it doesn't just pose, you know, like the career journey questions, but ethical questions. Mm. You know, for example, someone, a studio had a client in the tobacco industry. One of the people working there was against it and one person was for it, but they both said yes to doing the job. But only one person failed that because they were going against their own beliefs, right? So if you're happy to do it, you know, then you are who you are. But if you said yes to that and you were against tobacco, it means that you had just betrayed your values, what you believed in. And so I think it's a really important distinction when you get into advertising, marketing, or design that you got to be really aware.
Not every client's equal either.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Going into the ethics side of things as well, what are the areas that you look at for being ethical in advertising? Obviously, there's making sure that what you're the story that you're telling is true, or if it's fictitious, that it's obviously a fictitious story. What are the sort of ethical areas that you run into when you're trying to like either find a client or put together a brief?
It's funny because it's, you know, people may say advertising and like ethics are kind of hypocritical in some ways because at the end of the day, you're trying to sell a product, which is consumption, right? But I think that if you have a mindful advertising agency that has those ethics and values in mind, if it were to ever come up, certain decisions that we felt were wrong or weren't truthful, we would kind of bring it up and we would make sure that it wouldn't go out, right? So a lot of the time, people behind the scenes, every decision matters, right? And so just having that intention of making sure things are truthful and are the best for the world is a great place to start.
Yeah.
I guess people might say, you know, something like, I don't want to give it too specific examples, but let's say alcohol, because that's everyone, like, I love to drink.
There's a couple of great beer ads out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's a creative gold mine, right? Because it gives you the freedom to really express yourself, be funny. But alcohol is a double-edged sword, right? Because it causes
so many regulations around the advertising.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, in many ways, it's not a filter of like what types of client categories I will or won't do, but really like who you're working with and the value of making sure that it's authentic and truthful. Again, like there are certain ones that are just like no goes. Tobacco for personal, you know, reasons, I just wouldn't do that. But you know, if someone smoked and they didn't have a problem with it, then like, you know, power to them. Like I just think people have to be authentic with, you know, what they're okay and comfortable working on.
Something that's a bit more of a personal question for you. It probably leads towards like tips and tricks for other people, but how do you refresh your creativity? What are the things that you do that aren't necessarily for the agency, but are for you to feel like you're refreshed and that you're feeling creative again?
Yeah, that's a really beautiful, meaningful question for me now as I kind of that
20%.
Yeah, that ratio starts to change. You know, you start to miss being hands-on, you know. That being said, when I am hands-on, I'm like, wow, this is really hard work. I remember why being a creative director is a nice position. But yeah, the truth is I really miss being hands-on with the tools and actually designing. But what I've been really intentional about is setting some time aside after work or on the weekend and working on
a lot.
Yeah,
over COVID, right?
Been picking up guitar, teaching my partner ukulele, just doing anything creative that sits outside of that, you know, world. It's kind of nice, to be honest, to have the freedom to just do things for you, even if I were to never share them with my friends like you, just kind of getting it out of my system and to know for myself, like,
when there's not a client attached to the art sometimes.
But I think, you know, there's something beautiful that all the work we do at 3am obviously gets shared to millions of people. There's something nice about just designing something for myself and maybe not showing anyone, but, there will definitely be some artistic side projects that I'll release over time. But yeah, for now, I think it's still maybe one to 2 years away.
What elements in your early career, because I would say that you're quite a high output person, whether that used to be in the designs and the volume of work you could output to now, you know, the output is managing and running your business. How did you go from... And what were the things that you did to get yourself to that high output position? Because obviously there's a lot of ambition that drives that sort of thing for yourself. But what, you know, was it making sure that you had like a good sleep schedule? Obviously, the studio called 3 a.m. I don't think that's the case.
Well, we all leave at 5:30 to be very, very clear. But at early days, it was pretty bad, I would say.
As it always is, depending on your freelance or whatever, like late nights are just
part of the creative industry. As much as I would hate to admit it, I think early on it was a little bit of that, the late nights and, you know, being really intentional with my time, always making sure I'm putting aside to get better at a program or reading a book. trying to fill myself up with as much information as I can.
So the other work outside of the work that informs the work.
Yeah. I guess I always had a side project ever throughout uni, high school, whether that be like album art, doing a light installation as part of Vivid, trying to learn photography and filming. You know, there are things that you do as like little side projects and then, you know, down the line you might be directing a commercial, you might be working with a band. Yeah, you just never know when that will come back around, right? So definitely just like side projects and being intentional with time.
Nice. So with 3AM being this big team now, you guys are able to accomplish much larger projects as well. Is there anything that you guys have been working on recently that's been one of the bigger sort of milestone accomplishments of the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a really great partnership with Sony Australia. And so the past few campaigns and projects we've done, whether it be for cameras or Bravia TVs or the sound department, just some of our best work that I'm really proud of. And then we've got some really nice, interesting branding projects. We did a restaurant in Barangaroo called Tequila Daisy.
Oh, yeah.
With founders Beck and Hamish, incredible chefs. And then some stuff in like the digital crypto space as well with BlockEarner, trying to change the future of finance. Yeah. So I'm sure there's plenty more, you know, projects that I'd love to share whoever is listening to this. But yeah, if you visit our website, I'm sure we'll update it in the next few weeks.
And the website is?
Studio3.am.
So you just mentioned that you've done some stuff with a company called BlockEarner. Is blockchain influencing the way you guys work, or is it just more of a new space that's opening up that you're seeing more and more people requesting design services for? How's the like, blockchain world expanding into your world?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what we're seeing right now is the idea of crypto becoming mainstream. So I'm sure it's not just our studio, but it's being pretty widespread that all these new crypto products are coming out. So we're working with a really nice new brand called BlockEarner, and they're trying to solve the problem of making crypto accessible and mainstream and understandable for normal Australians. You think of crypto, it's like, oh, only geeky or technical people know how to do that.
It's quite the learning curve. If you're not obsessed with it for the 3 months that you need to be at the start, you kind of like get lost.
Yeah, exactly. So it's an interesting question, right, or challenge. How do you get the everyday Australian who is not interested in technology or crypto to use it like an everyday bank, right? And so what they've done is just kind of take that experience of a normal everyday banking online account, like a Commonwealth Bank or Everyday Saver, and making that accessible in the exact same way. But it's all using crypto technology, and it's kind of doing all the magic in the background. But yeah,
it just looks like a normal bank transfer, but really it's pasting wallet address to wallet address.
Exactly, yeah. But with much more competitive interest percentages and things like that. So, yeah, really interesting space, and just proud
to
work
with
them.
How are you guys implementing design to fix those solutions of communicating that idea?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what a funny problem I guess they were having initially was positioning themselves as a product for everyday Australians. Yeah. Unfortunately, you don't get to jump from being a crypto category of brand directly into being for everyday Australians. So in order to kind of get more people to sign up, really they should be targeting people who at least have a bit more of an inkling in the crypto space or the digital space, and then slowly transition to being like completely widespread mainstream. So that was a bit of a change of strategy that they themselves had realized and came to us to kind of approach visually. And from that, we've launched multiple campaigns with them, and yeah, it's going great.
So I guess for people who hear the word creative director, or the title of creative director, it can be quite broad in many ways. What does it mean to be a creative director for Jonathan Key at 3AM?
Yeah, you're right there. It is quite broad.
Yeah,
and,
it's a bit of an umbrella heading.
It means something different for every industry as well. But I guess in the context of advertising, you got the two sides, right? You've got the client side and you've got the studio side. In terms of the studio side, you got people working on the actual like design and the art direction, things like that, how it looks and feels. But in order to kind of bridge the gap between the client side and the design side, you're going to have someone communicate with the client, not just understand, you know, what visual goals you're trying to solve, but what business goals they're trying to solve as well.
So you get the bird's eye view of the whole thing.
Exactly.
Rather than just like the specialized sections.
Exactly. And what this does is it gives the designers and the art directors the freedom to kind of go wild, do amazing creative, and then I can just come in and just make sure it's on the right route, that the strategy and the business goals are deeply embedded with every decision. Again, like design, if you got a talented team, of course it's going to look fantastic, right?
Yeah.
But is it going to look fantastic and also help solve A, B, C problem?
Yeah.
That's the challenge.
Just making things pretty.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, a lot of it is that having that bird's eye perspective of an entire project. I remember as a designer, I would get really frustrated because I would be like, oh, but this looks better. You know, this, yeah. like I've been working on this for a whole day. I know for a fact this looks better. But unfortunately for designers, it's not always a case of what looks better, but what's going to get the best result yeah. for the bigger picture, whether that be a bigger picture for a system, for the brand strategy, or sometimes like a brand just wants to be a little more conservative and, you know, that's completely okay as yeah. well. So it's an interesting obstacle, but like I guess creative direction is seeing that client side and the creative side and bringing those two components.
So there's
together.
A large element of project management in there as well.
Yeah, a little bit. These days we brought on a studio manager,
oh, nice.
The lovely Rhea, who's making everything, you know, just like seamless, smooth, nice and clean, not like before. once upon a time I was managing the projects. But I guess these days I get to focus a little bit more on like the creative feedback, making sure I'm giving direction so that everything is heading towards the same points
yeah.
and not like disparate, messy map. So Rhea will make sure the actual project timelines and tasks are neat and tidy, and I'll make sure that the creative is likewise headed in a nice, clean and smooth path.
So you guys are located in Sydney. What suburb is your office in?
Darlington.
You guys in Darlington there. So being a part of like Sydney, the inner west, there's a lot of creativity happening around there. And Sydney has, again, a lot of creative pockets around the place. What would you say from your personal perspective is the future of creativity in Sydney?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, if we compare ourselves to maybe other cities around the world, we're a little more insular and we have our own circles, our little cliques, and, you know, like you have a group, but are those groups connecting with other groups? Maybe not.
Yeah.
I think the more that we work towards it, Sydney's going to be a much more collaborative and creative place. Things like this podcast, for example, you know, being really honest and, you know, like transparent about how things work with us and different creatives, like, I think that's like such a brilliant thing. And, you know, I'd just like to say that, like, if anyone wants to ask about anything we do or, you know, just get a coffee, like I'm always open book, I guess, with that kind of stuff.
You just have to buy the coffee. That's the trick there.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, so it's very much about like getting all those nodes connected in the future. How would you see that happening?
Well, there's a really great event called the Design Kids, originally intended for graduates or students studying design.
University focused?
Yeah, but I guess the brand has evolved to just become something if you're into creativity. You can attend these
meetups. Advertising called Young Bloods?
Yeah, Young Bloods. Yeah. That's great as well. So that's an incredible event, and we're actually going to be hosting a talk later this year, opening up our studio, inviting really anyone to just come in and check out some of our projects as we kind of share the process, talk about our journey, you know, how we got from like a little, you know, 1 to 2 freelancer type setup to like a full-fledged studio. Yeah, I think there's a real beauty in like getting rid of all the smoke and mirrors and just like sharing that knowledge. And then it's, you know, I have no problem sharing that knowledge. It's going to make us stronger,
exactly,
right? It's going to make the future of the Sydney design scene
funny,
better.
Like, doesn't matter who I've had on the podcast yet, whether they be dancers, photographers, musicians, whatever, it always comes back to that there's enough of the pie to go around for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's funny how you see certain people really like hold on to their little corner where they're like, don't touch my pie. But then there's other people, yeah, have a slice, come sit with me. Like, and then you can kind of, you end up enjoying the experience of your work even more when you share the pie. That's my pie analogy that randomly slipped out there, but
I love a good pie analogy. Yeah. All good.
But it's funny sort of witnessing three different perspectives, how Sydney in particular is so I guess, noded out into different pockets of areas, but then those crossovers happen every so often, and when they do, it's really great. So it'd be interesting to see how that could happen more and more in the future. Well, thank you so much for coming on and chatting all things creativity and design.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, and thanks for sticking around to the end of this episode of Create Creative Creatives. Thank you to Jonathan for jumping on the podcast and chatting all things design. If you feel like checking out Studio 3AM and all the great work that they do, there's a link below in the description for you to do just that. If you missed our previous episode, we had Vienna Marie talking all things about manifesting creativity and mental health for creatives. Until next time, I'm Hayden Buchanan, and this has been Create Creative Creatives. I'll see you next Tuesday.